Welcome to the Humanist Union of Madison. And our program today is an open discussion on looking back, looking forward. Hopefully some of you have looked back over the list of programs we have conducted over the past 7 years since our inception and picked out favorites. I have a listing that I'll pass around. If anybody has not had that opportunity for the last 5 years, you can refresh your memory about programs we've had. Looking forward, we want to get your ideas for programs for the coming year, and also your ideas on how to take advantage of publicity for our group generated by the Madison Area Coalition of Reason publicity campaign, which has not yet started, but should be starting soon. So, if anybody would like to start, about your favorite programs for the past 7 years. I came up with a list of seven, and I'll mention three of them. Perhaps my most favorite program was the Sean F. Peters program on faith healing children and the law, because it combined dealing with the issue of separation of church and state and the need for social action to change the situation that we have in our state where the law promoted by the Mormon Church years ago provides an exemption from child abuse laws for parents who use faith healing instead of taking their child to a doctor. And it's not that parents can't do that for themselves, but the question is, should there be a legal exemption allowing children to be denied medical care because of the beliefs of their parents? Another program that I thought was particularly good was the Jesus Camp program. You may remember we saw the movie and then had a lively discussion with, which included 8 students from the UW campus, including some from, it was the Campus Crusade for Christ. He came along with the atheist humanist group from campus. They were friends. But it, you know, it went well. It wasn't a hostile exchange. It was a good discussion. And another, finally, favorite program of mine was something most of you didn't have a chance to participate in. It was the interview with Eugenie Scott of the National Center for Science Education, because that took place at our home on an off day when she was in town. That was an hour and a half interview that was really interesting to hear her own background and how she came to be head of the National Center for Science and Education. So, other thoughts?
I'm trying to find the one that I really appreciated, and I think it was Mel Lipman's daughter.
Oh, yes.
And I'm also blocking the name of the organization.
The Secular Student Alliance.
Yes.
Secular Coalition
for
America.
Coalition for America. Thank you. And it was just really encouraging to me to know that there was an organization that was now also starting to be have influence on Congress and out there representing our views, which was a major undertaking.
Right.
And I would like to see an update of that as one of our programs, is to have someone come and kind of maybe give an overview of what they've done over time and where we stand now.
Lori Lipman Brown was the speaker,
yes.
And she was succeeded by Sean Fairclough, who also spoke to us.
Yes.
Can you give the dates of those when you, if you know them? I can take some notes and you find these easier.
The dates are all listed on the website.
I know they are, but if you...
I don't have it. You'll have to look up that.
It was like 2 years ago, maybe.
Yeah, it was early on. Not too long, I think, after we began.
There's so many. You know, over
7 years. This month we've been... Yeah.
Well, that's a lot.
And I appreciated her father, Mel Lipman, coming out. And There's more insight into the American Humanist Association and just, you know, meeting the quality of people that are working on a national level was meaningful to me.
So your suggestion for the future is another program on a Secular Coalition for America?
Mm-hmm. And maybe another one bringing us up to date on what's going on nationwide. I get into the website periodically, and I was just looking at their, just like we all get way too much of, I think, is action alerts from a gazillion different organizations. But the American Humanist Association also, if you don't want them to send them to you in the email, you can just go to the website, and they have an I think it's upper right-hand corner, it says something about action. You just click on it, and you can find out what that organization is working on.
Other people from memory of past programs?
I can only say I've enjoyed them. They've been very interesting, but I can't remember specific ones.
I guess I'll join in by saying I echo Bob's comment about Eugenie Scott. Although I think she was actually visiting for the Biotechnology Center convention on religion and science.
Right. You reported on that.
Yes. Yeah. So I actually was lucky enough to be part of that conversation at your house with Eugenie Scott. And I think the FAFSA topic is very fascinating. People's kind of the American public's perception of science and how it intersects with their religious beliefs and some trends in the American society that are, to me, concerning. So I think that's a good theme. So I enjoy those conversations. And I just wanted to also, there are too many to list, but I really enjoy our book conversations because I think there are so many good books out there about ideas that humanists should be thinking about, interested in, talking about. So I think those usually spark good conversations because it can be difficult to get speakers and for every session. So I think it's fun to bring books and do book reports.
If we hear about the books a few months ahead of time, so
yeah, we can read. And I'll delete it. You've done quite a number of the book reports and done a really good job.
Thank you.
Speaking about books, I'm reading Tom Paine. And believe me, it's like he's living right now. In the Age of Reason section of this compilation of his writings that I'm reading, he talks about Christians' war against science. just on through the ages, it just hasn't changed. So I think it'd be a good idea
to revisit. We had a program. Didn't you do a program on Tom Paine?
Yes. Years ago.
You did a program on Tom Paine some years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Did you? Yeah. But I think he's worth revisiting always.
Yeah.
You have to remember Tom Paine was in England. There were mobs raging through big areas of England and murdering and burning down houses of people who were basically unitarians. They were free thinkers. Mm-hmm. They were not tolerated.
Like Priestley.
Priestley was one of them. Yeah. His house was burnt down. You see, his family had to flee
his
for their lives.
His library was burned.
And so Tom Paine had to move to a small town. What was the name of the town?
About an hour's drive
south of London. Remember the name of the town? I have photographs of Tom Paine's home there.
No, it was where he used to meet.
Where he used to meet. It was a historic marker there.
Lewis.
That was a little refuge for the freethinkers. of England. It was one of the few places in England where they were really covered.
And now, he and Jefferson are out of the Texas history books, and Estee Lauder is now in.
What?
And now he and Jefferson are out of the Texas history books, and Estee Lauder is now in.
She's a very good businesswoman.
He and, oh, you mean Tom Paine.
Tom
Jefferson. Galen, do you remember the program put on by Tom Givnish? Evolution of Life on Islands.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I got on the web and was looking, I think specifically, Humanists in Action was what I was looking for.
Yeah.
And I popped up an article by a humanist from India, and it was very interesting. His challenge to humanists was, and of course I think it varies with the age of the humanist and the capabilities of the humanist, speaking to myself, but he was really challenging humanists to get out into the community to, in terms of humanitarian type of work, to show the larger community what we believe in. I think that really depends on the energies and the ages of the group. And we are an older group, and there's only so much we can do in that regard, but it's something to ponder. And I wouldn't mind having someone who maybe has been involved in a lot of community work as a humanist come in and say, you know,
a few months ago, didn't we have a program like that where we talked
about? We talked about what we had done, which was very.
We announce ourselves as humans to the wider community. People are used to people in the churches who we.
Yeah.
Do we have some t-shirts? I am a humanist.
Maybe we should have some t-shirts.
Is anybody familiar with Dale McGowan's Foundation Beyond Belief? It's a charitable donation organization where the participants decide what charities they want each year or each half year and donate by regular payroll deduction. He's a humanist who has been the editor of the book Raising Freethinkers, and there's another follow-up book aimed at parents who want to raise their children without religion, raise critical thinkers, get them to think for themselves. He's a very good speaker. I wish we could get him, but he's so, he was the keynote speaker a year ago at General Assembly for the Liberal Religious Education Organization within the UUA. And that was my favorite talk at GA in Minneapolis.
Do you think he'd come? Do you think he'd come?
No, I think he's too busy. He was doing seminars around the country, and he ended up with 100 different cities waiting for him to do seminars, so he decided to do them on the YouTube now. He's got a series of 5 little films on YouTube.
Would we be beyond YouTube watching something on YouTube together?
I didn't hear that.
Would we be beyond watching something on YouTube together? And
that's a possibility.
Because those are important issues.
Right. Especially for parents of school-age children.
Right. I have a grandchild of school age, and his dad was raised Unitarian, but his mom was raised Christian Science. And between the two of them, they haven't decided what to do about educating their son or getting experience. Mm-hmm. They're thinking about Unitarianism, but I'm not sure how she feels about it. She's kind of quiet about things like that.
I have a couple things to say. I liked Jane S. Benson's presentation with the member, or former minister, particularly. Also, Richard Russell, when he talked about the logic to faith, and how we decide on what to believe, and the fact that we decide using very illogical notions was quite useful. But I want to emphasize Leon Hirschiali's lecture, which we didn't have here, of course, but Bob recorded, I believe. And is that actually your recording available on the web? Or
it may still be available.
Summary.
Yeah, it was from the back of the balcony, so it's not the greatest recording.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, I mentioned during the service today, Rose and I went to that, and I thought that was a terrific lecture and a lesson in the importance of separation of church and state, mainly.
Mm-hmm. And of course, she's written several books, and someone could do a book report on Infidel or one of her other books.
The two really important books, Infidel, and the previous one was called. That was the first one. Remember, Rose? She's a Biblia. What were Leon Hirschiali's books?
Oh, Infidel, and the latest one is Nomad.
That's even almost better than Nomad.
I thought I remembered that Sean Carroll spoke to us.
He did. That was remembering.
Yeah, that was way back.
That was 2007.
He's a fabulous speaker.
He's a wonderful speaker.
Yeah.
Did you say Sean Carroll?
Yeah. Sean Carroll.
We could never get Sean Carroll, but we had John Hawks.
No, Sean Carroll spoke to him.
Yeah.
Not here.
Oh.
I think it was a lecture you recorded or something like that.
I know he spoke at the Bioethics Forum on Religion and Science.
Right, and he spoke at Darwin Day on campus.
Yeah. I guess here it says March 14th in the evening. He gave a lecture.
Some of us attended.
The Making of the Fittest was the DNA.
Oh. Yeah, some it wasn't here.
It wasn't here, I'm sorry.
But some of us, like he's talked on campus and he talked at Borders Books once.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we couldn't get him. He's too popular.
Yeah.
I have another suggestion. I think that it would be good to explore talent on campus and invite some of the campus people to give presentations here and bring their people with them. But come here, mm-hmm. so that we're sharing with younger people. It's within our framework. Mm-hmm. And we're also getting voices of younger people. And there must be quite a bit of talent there among the freethinkers on the Madison campus that we can tap.
There's a group called Atheists, Humanists, and Agnostics at the UW, which has 400 students on its email list at this point.
Yeah.
So I'm in contact with Chris from time to time, Chris Cowley, the president.
Sure.
And they're also members of the Madison Area Coalition of Reason.
Well, it would be nice to have them use their email to get the word out about a presentation here.
Or we could arrange a joint meeting on campus, which would
might get more.
Many more students would come to that than they would come here.
Yeah.
Other ideas for future programs?
There is a humanist minister in Milwaukee. You probably know of him. I think his last name's Harris.
The humanist celebrant?
Yeah, and he's also
involved in the political scene there.
Yes, very much so. I've been following some of that. And he's done a lot of work with youth and families and calls himself a humanist minister. I'd like to explore it a little more before actually issuing an invitation, but I think that's one possibility, as is, I'm just blocking his name, which is in Illinois. The Humanist
Celebrant
in Illinois.
Oh, the Humanist Society official.
Yeah. Cats. Cats.
Howard
Cats. Cats, yeah. Might be another possibility.
Right. Yes.
And he's got his fingers in a lot of different aspects of humanism, and I think he might be a very interesting
person to have up here. But the fellow in Milwaukee, he's an African-American man. He's worked in impoverished communities for quite a number of years. Politically active, in the height of political battle, shall we say. And I think last year ran for president of the, was it NAACP, I think. Didn't win, but turned around and is supporting the winner. It was a battle, it was a hard battle. And I don't know the ins and outs of all of it, but he might be a... I've listened to him on YouTube more recently, giving a presentation on parenting. He was very good. I thought he was very good.
I wonder if there are any local politicians, assembly people, or senators who are really humanists in their philosophy, but just don't talk about it. And we could get to come talk to us. It's just a wild notion popped into my head.
Yeah. Private humanists.
They probably want to keep a look.
Secret humanists.
Well,
they'd be willing to talk to us, but not
secret
humanists. Well, that's
positive. It's on the air. Stuff on the air.
We talked about that a little bit when Lori Lipman Brown was here, the Secular Coalition for America. One of the things they're trying to do is to get our elected officials and government to proclaim their
to out them
as humanists. And they have gotten one, and I think it's the senator from California, I'm going to forget his name, one
representative,
to officially say he's an atheist and a humanist.
And a Unitarian.
And a Unitarian, but they know in a secular coalition, they know there are a lot more, but they won't say, because it's a political kiss of death, if you will, unless you're from California, apparently, but...
Well, the other one that I know is
dead. Well, yeah, but he's never gotten elected.
You know? I mean, yeah, he is a congressperson.
Yes, he is.
Wasn't he Catholic?
He was.
Dallas Kucinich.
Oh, Kucinich.
Yeah, I think he's come out and said that he's pretty much a humanist.
One of the techniques they did, and we could do it too as a group, is to, they sent not a questionnaire saying, are you a humanist, but sent more like a questionnaire saying, do you think this is, do you think that, do you believe in that, this, or the other thing. And what it basically came down to was all the, whatever amount of questions they had, were basically, if you answered it right, you were a humanist. And they, you know, we send that out to all our politicians and just sort of say we sort of have humanist beliefs. Would you come and talk to us?
Publish a voter's guide.
We could probably get the questionnaire from the American Humanist Society if you wanted to do it.
That's a good point.
Political suicide.
Next election, we could. Have something for some of the candidates for office, like those who are running for Tammy Baldwin's seat, like Helen Kelda Royce, and I think Mark Pocan is running for the seat.
Yeah,
be interesting to know what their perspectives are on humanism and atheism and such.
Yeah, people like Tammy Baldwin and Mark Pocan both are possible. Closet humanists. I don't know their religion. Anybody?
Well, you could ask the kind of questions, do you think an atheist is unfit to serve in public office? Mm-hmm. And let the challenge answer that question. They don't have to say what their own beliefs are. They don't believe it should be an option.
That's a really pretty good idea. Maybe we could come up with some sort of a questionnaire would be suitable to distribute to candidates.
Well, it'd be interesting to get comments on
recall elections that are coming up.
topic that occurs to me is is the discussion of religious posturing of candidates for political office.
Yes.
What other candidates think of that?
Yeah, it would be interesting to ask them, if you are a Christian, how often do you go to church? Because a lot of these that profess, you know, don't really practice.
Well, you don't have to go to church.
No, no. So I go to church just to put on appearances.
No, it doesn't. No, it would be interesting question to ask.
A number of the professed Christians are such hypocrites.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at.
Actually, I don't know. I think this conversation's going in slightly an uncomfortable turn for me because I feel like you can be a Christian and a humanist, and a Muslim and a humanist, and so I don't care what their religious beliefs are. Mm-hmm. I care more about how to apply humanism into the wider society. Going back to your idea, Delita.
Absolutely.
I was driving, just on the Beltline, and there was a big Catholic Charities van. Love Catholic Charities, they do tons of great work, but wouldn't it be great to have a big humanist charities band? I don't know, I'd like to get more people in here from the community that are doing community actions. So maybe we'll learn about some opportunities to go out and about. I know this group is more of a discussion group, but I think it would be interesting to know what's happening right here in our own community that humanists could become more engaged in.
That's something that is part of the humanist community building at Harvard University, which Greg Epstein has been involved with.
Yeah.
And some of you may remember Sarah Olberg's program, where she talked about all these different meetings she went to, and the one she was really enthusiastic about was the New Humanism Conference he had organized at Harvard. And that humanist community there has grown since then and taken on social projects as well as discussions and speakers. Sarah Olberg, of course, was key in our formation and put on some programs here. Does anyone remember the program put on by the Dockstaders?
I was thinking about them.
Bridget and Thomas Dockstader.
Do you know where they are and what they're doing?
They're in Baraboo.
They're in Baraboo. And right. Have they successfully gotten an organization going?
No, they were living in Reedsburg and organized some meetings there. Mm-hmm. And then his job moved, so he had to move, and nothing has been started in Baraboo area.
What was that program?
It was on ethical culture.
Oh, ethical culture.
Mm-hmm. Basic principles of ethical culture, because they had been involved with the Ethical Humanist Society of Chicago. Mm-hmm. And then moved to Wisconsin and couldn't find a single such society anywhere in Wisconsin, but discovered the Humanist Union on the website, and so they came here.
Yeah.
We also had a series of programs, a study group organized by Ron Solomon, who has involved with the ethical culture movement for many years, and he was on the American Ethical Union National Board. That's a parallel to the Unitarian Universalist Association because it's the umbrella group for all the ethical culture congregations around the country. And he's also been a vice president of the International Ethical and Humanist Union, which is an international group that is particularly active with the United Nations when issues come up. On separation of church and state.
Is he still around his group?
Is Ron Solomon?
Yeah.
He's still in town, yes, he moved here. And he can put on programs from time to time. He has put on a number for us.
He doesn't come to one meeting.
He doesn't come regularly, no.
I've seen him here before, I was wondering.
Yeah. Certainly a kindred spirit.
There's a group, a Madison Ethical Discussion Group, which is meets in participants' homes, and he's involved with their monthly meetings as well.
I was just noticing a program called A Place at the Table, how the nation's first lobbyist for non-theists is enjoying the feast. I wonder what's changed.
That was Laurie Lipman Brown's program.
I wonder what may have changed as to what they're lobbying about.
Well, you recall Sean Faircloth spoke to us after that when he took over her position. Also Ron Solomon talked about issues at one of our retreats that Secular Coalition for America is dealing with. But we could certainly do an update on their current issues.
I can't remember what an AMP are.
I don't remember whether it was here or not. I didn't come to a lot in the beginning. Yeah, but certainly we could have a lobbyist. Sounds good.
This is T.
We've also had both Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor put on programs.
They were here? Really?
Here?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's great. Oh, we listen to them every Saturday.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes, they have a free thought radio program. Mm-hmm.
I've never seen them in person.
Oh, yeah. Dynamite. People.
It would be nice to get them back for us. They've been doing the National Day of Prayer stuff. And one of their enemies is the Dobsons, American Family, whatever they're called.
Family Research.
It would be really nice if we could get them to come and talk about those Dobson creeps.
The focus on the family and the Family Research Council, is that what you're...
There we go, yeah.
There was just an article, where did I see it? I don't know where I saw it. About Perry.
Rick Perry,
attending a meeting with some of the more radical or fundamentalist evangelicals, and point by point, making points with them, and I think Dobson was part of that. Powerful, powerful media influence, and a lot of powerful influence through the Family Research Council.
Way too powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was.
The other thing is going back to the going out into the community type stuff. As the leader was pointing out, it depends on the level of energies. But Pat Watkins was sitting here next to me at lunchtime. And she was saying that she'd like to volunteer for Tammy Baldwin's campaign, but she couldn't do that much. So even out of her own brain came up the idea that she's very good at organizing. She does, for Prairie, she does these field trip type things. So she thought she could organize little coffees at people's homes or something like that if Tammy Baldwin was up to that. So it sort of brings to mind getting somebody who's in the charity business, who can sort of give the variations of sort of things you can do. I mean, for example, I think, if you want to donate your time to campaign, it's either calling people up or walking around the neighborhood. But there must be variations for all sorts of things, including Habitat for Humanity, where it depends. I mean, they must have degrees of energy type things and time. It would be interesting to get somebody who knows that sort of thing. I have no idea what it would be, but it would be interesting to get somebody like that.
I've been wondering why some group, and that's not me, wouldn't be getting people out to help get people to get their IDs.
I think that's a really great idea. I'm thinking it's something that those of us who drive could do. It's something maybe even within this community we could do, but
instead of waiting until it's
finding out in Madison whether or not what's the process, where do you go, how soon you have to start. How are they going to try to trip you up by not telling you everything you need to know?
That's the kind of thing, if we got some people from the community coming in here to speak to us, then we could plug into, because this group is too small.
I agree.
To spearhead anything like that. But if we had more connections in with the community on these actions are taking place, because I can guarantee you there's going to be some group, if not more, that will organize something like that. Then those of us who can...
I don't think the TAA has actually organized anything like that, but they have all the information as to who, what, where, why, etc.
I wonder if the League of Women Lawyers...
Teachers Association of America, I don't know what it's called. The TA Union?
Okay. Teaching Assistants Association.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you. I'm wondering if League of Women Voters is...
They do have all the information, and they even have a the thing on their emails where you can get the information.
I guess I'm just suggesting we add a third dimension into our programming. Mm-hmm. We seem to be really good on scientific topics, which I love, kind of government and politics and how humanists and should try to counteract the fundamentalist sort of trends, which is awesome. Why not add a community, local community component? Not so we can be the movers and shakers, but we can join the movers and shakers with our t-shirts, our humanist union t-shirts.
Like, I do read that Epstein thing, but half the time it's things like Habitat Humanity and, you know, probably one of the younger ones here, and I don't want to go build a house.
Well, I mean, but there's lots of different things.
Now I know. That's why I'm saying we need variation.
Leadership doesn't take any.
So then,
yeah.
Well, I think it's important as elections are right now, and we have to do it without getting involved, I think, politically. I imagine we'd be considered the same as a church with regard to preaching from the pulpit.
We don't have any taxes on taxes.
But I see no reason why we couldn't.
We're getting people... Helping people,
helping people.
Yeah.
Some of them may be Republicans, but
yeah. They all need ideas.
Yeah.
The peace and justice.
Isn't it appalling that there was a piece of the paper that people at the Department of Transportation are forbidden to tell people that they can have a free photo unless they ask for it voluntarily.
The Peace and Justice Network has a lot of connections. I think that this is a concern. They're working really hard in their way for the recall, and that's affected. I heard this too, that as it was with a lot of the people who needed welfare, different kinds of programs through the Aver Center, they were instructed under Tommy Thompson not to give them any idea of what was available to them unless they knew to ask for it. And it's the same thing with the ID. There's also, a Progressive Dane, I think, is also very concerned about local issues and has been sort of pushed out as a political party, but very, very concerned about all this too. And those might be two places to plug into to find out what structure is already existing that people could put energy into one way or another.
And of course, the League of Women Voters is the one that's doing the lawsuit, so.
Yeah.
That DOT employee who leaked that information in a department-wide email was fired.
Really?
Yeah, they're supposedly reviewing that, but that I don't know what will happen.
Jeez.
Now, DOT is covering his tracks by saying there were other reasons and other naughty things he did. But Urban Bach has got an appointment to review the firing to make sure it's completely.
What did they call in the basis? They cited previous work removal violations.
Mm-hmm. Which can practically mean anything, like wearing a button saying recall wants it to work.
We're political things, buttons and that, so, you know, he did step over the line, regrettably so.
Why? Did they think it would start a riot?
It was just something that started, you know, years and years and years ago, to keep the civil servant, remember that's what we would call neutral, because they were government employees and were supposed to be.
Well, I'm not saying that's what he did. I mean, you could just do something simple like wearing a button called recall walker and get a work violation. You could show up 1 minute late and get a work violation.
You can use the internet for on work purposes.
And get a violation. You get, say, at my place, you get 15 minutes a day if you get 16 sit on it for 16 minutes because somebody interrupted you when you were doing something. You could get a work violation. Work violations don't mean much, is basically what I'm saying.
But they give them freely, apparently.
They're, I mean, they're pretty much a way for anybody who wants to get rid of an employee to get rid of an employee, and pretty much ignored by anybody who doesn't give a hoot about it, and just that's the employees doing whatever work they were doing. I've seen it, it's been totally abused by some supervisors and accepted by others.
That reminds me of another topic that might be interesting, maybe not, but the whole social media wave that's happening across the world, really, with the rising, I think that there was some big something spray painted on a wall in Egypt, thank you Facebook, you know, for all the ways that social media is being used to promote actions.
How about
might be a good, might be an interesting topic. And there was recently, there's a very large corporation called Salesforce.com that is kind of from a, I don't know, money and corporation standpoint, kind of plugging into the social aspect, and they're predicting that in 20, 30 years, our entire way of working is going to change because workers will be empowered with social tools and rise up against their own corporations.
Right.
So it could happen, but that might be an interesting topic about how new technologies are going to revolutionize the way we work together, the way we collaborate together,
the way we learn.
The way we learn.
Good idea.
Mm-hmm. There was one session at the Democracy Convention on social media led by Annabelle Park, who's a Korean background but real spark plug of an activist, the founder of the Coffee Party USA.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you've heard of that, but they've gotten 400,000 links to their Facebook page, and they're organizing an event in Washington, D.C., based on free speech for anybody who wants to come and
I take it as a play on the Tea Party, it's
right.
The Coffee Party. Okay.
Right. So,
that's
she,
what drinking liberally was.
I think it would be interesting to get our own blue cheddar woman here to talk.
I met her at the Democracy Convention.
Huh? Yeah.
Do you want to invite her to talk?
I think she'd be very interesting to talk.
Mm-hmm.
Carol, right?
Is that her name?
I think
I
so.
Didn't get her name. Carol Weiss?
No, but I think you might be surprised. It might be somebody you know.
You can look up
blue
cheddar.
I think she's been
there.
What's blue cheddar?
Is that
like
blue cheese or
cheddar?
That's her Facebook name.
That's her Facebook
name. It's like blue state and cheddar.
She has a blog. It's a blue
yeah,
cheddar blog. And she's
right.
She's become, I've watched it progress over time. And she studies Ming. I mean, you know, she's learning to, and she does videos, radio interviews, a lot of photos. I knew election results through blue cheddar before John Nichols knew them, and he was talking to who's the red-headed commentator on MSNBC?
Ed Schultz.
Don was on the Ed Schultz show. They were waiting for the results of the recalls. And Blue Cheddar had it, I think, before then. I think Association Press had it before then. But she had people tweeting from all of the election centers throughout the state. And they were just feeding in, the tweets were feeding into Blue Cheddar. And so you were getting just almost immediate results as soon as those election headquarters got them. And it was very, very interesting following that blog.
There's a book that has just been published called We the People,
mm-hmm.
Wisconsin, which collects all the tweets that were sent from the Capitol during the uprising February and March. And she was one of the primary tweeters.
Oh, I bet she was. But she's very, very interesting.
It's available online for free download as a PDF, or you can purchase it.
We the People.
We the People, right?
Is that a book?
It's good.
The book is called We the People.
I mean, I didn't want anything to do with Twitter. I thought, this is silly, you know. Why do I want to waste my time with these little beeps of sound?
or not in sound. And it has paid off in very, very interesting ways. Just this continual flow of one or two sentences and links just coming in all the time. Just, it's very interesting. I still am not on Twitter.
Another media outlook I learned about at the Democracy Convention is called Blog Talk Radio, where people can use this Blog Talk Radio service to create a radio program which then broadcasts or webcasts over the web. And the person I met was Sarah Schultz, who lives in Lake Geneva and is dealing with issues in Wisconsin on her weekly Blog Talk Radio program, which has been running for an hour and a half each Saturday. She's just increasing it to 2 hours, and she's now being broadcast on my low-power radio station as well. She might be a guest to invite.
Yeah. The Blue Cheddar Lady has...
They know each other. They're both
bloggers.
They know
each other. And
Sarah's been invited to be the guest at the Oregon Progressive Group.
Where is she from?
Lake Geneva. In Paul Ryan's district.
Wow.
Oh dear.
So she has things to say about him.
Yes.
Can imagine.
Yeah, so the media, that would be...
There was a real hunger for more information about the Twitter and Facebook and such things at the session that Annabelle Park led.
Yeah.
Some people were just completely uneasy with getting into them, but were curious and had never tried them.
Yeah.
Others were real experienced, like the younger people.
I'm not Twittering or Facebook or anything either. I'm not sure how safe it is to become so casual talking with strangers.
Well, you can always restrict access to your Facebook.
Menchie, they already know everything about
me. My deepest, darkest secrets?
Yeah, probably. Somebody knows. You don't have to post those on Facebook.
Well, Menchie raises a question that I'm always concerned about, which is accessibility to information. You know, there are people who don't have computer access. There are people who, you know, would be sort of locked out of that social media network. And so sort of just like to remember that I would assume that we would want to be inclusive and that.
But when I hear that statement, Nancy, I always kind of get a little baffled because our local libraries are fabulous resources.
Do you use the internet at your library?
Occasionally.
Okay, because I used to use it and, you know, to have to spend time every week figuring out when to go. It is a bit of hassle, so I take your point. However, it's not the same thing as having it in your own home where
True.
You have access
True.
Anytime.
True.
It is limiting.
Yes, yeah. You are
right.
Correct.
But I'm suggesting that we depend exclusively on that. So.
Yeah, I don't have Wi-Fi.
I like to point out that people my age, I'm now 85, going on 86, most of my age class can't really deal with the technology of Facebook and the other social media. Let me give you an example. I got on Facebook sort of by accident about a year ago. But then I discovered that I couldn't get at my Facebook account because they didn't recognize the university email system as they wouldn't deal with list.edu. And so I had to set up another account with Google or something. I forgot what it was.
Gmail.
And that worked. But then I found it essentially impossible to get into that account because of the password problem. The password that I worked out with them originally is no longer valid. And anyway, there are too many hassles. I keep getting messages from other Facebook people to, you know, but I just, it's just too difficult. I don't have the time in my life to deal with all those things.
But and you're I my friend that, on Facebook, Elon.
Yeah. Technically. I've spent, you know, once in a while, about every 2 weeks, I said, well, then I'm going to kill this dragon. And I sit there and spend a half an hour, maybe, trying to get onto his Facebook pages and various people in my own account, and I can't do it.
Well, if
and so there are, but there are thousands and thousands of people my age, and we're very socially conscious, and we want to do the right thing, but it's just beyond us to deal with it.
I think we've created a two-tiered society.
We don't have the energy anymore.
Yeah.
So there's a good volunteer project for you young folks to come around and coach the old.
Right. That was a, there were a lot of great people at the democracy convention looking for help.
Then there are people like me who will have nothing whatsoever to do with that computer.
Go, you know, Galen posted your picture up on Facebook.
You didn't tell me.
It's the only picture I had of me. I had available. And it's the two of us. It was from our.
That's my
invasion of privacy.
So the two of us together.
Oh man,
people who visit the page have to figure out which one.
Which one is you?
It's not just your age. I mean, I'm not on Facebook. I got dragged into using cell phones because public phones started going out. Resistance. Yeah, otherwise, I probably wouldn't have bothered with a cell phone. I'm not on Facebook, and the only way I'm going to get dragged into it is if people keep posting things only on Facebook.
Right.
So I just can't find the information without it.
I even detest email. Especially, you know, if you're in the same city, pick up the phone.
That's true.
Well, you know, you call and leave a message.
When
they
call,
you're not
calling. They leave a message. Email has lots of.
But, you know, I check my email once every 10 days, if that.
Of course you can, because,
you know, and I'm afraid of Facebook and all the others, because to me, you know, let's talk about identity now.
If I wait 10 days and check my email, I've got maybe 400 or 500 emails for me to wade through. It takes me 2 or 3 hours.
From Facebook?
If I pay any attention at all to the vast majority of my non-solicited, they're not friends.
Yeah, that's right. So, I hit the delete button.
And so, well.
Actually, you can select a bunch of them.
Even to delete all of those one by one.
You don't have to do it one by one.
Well, I know.
Spam shift key down. Well, top one and the bottom, and all the ones in between will go.
Well, yeah. Well, that's a good point. That's a little detail that I didn't know. I mean, there are hundreds of important little details about how to use my computer that I didn't know about. And
I'm glad you made your way out. Well, thank you all for coming.
Okay. And going.
Does this building have Wi-Fi?
Yes.